It's the shortest day of the year, so we'll heat up the hot stove next on Baseball HQ Radio.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron. The fireworks are going.
Learn to play the winner's way, because Baseball HQ Radio starts right now. And here's your host from BaseballHQ.com, columnist Patrick Davitt.
And welcome to Baseball HQ Radio for December the 20th. And we're going to call this one show number one of the 2014 fantasy baseball season. I am Patrick Davitt, your host, and while it might not actually be the winter solstice, it's getting pretty darn close. And it's been a very hot offseason so far as we ring out 2013 and do approach that 2014 baseball season. We've seen more than 100 free agent signings and players moving by trade so far, and of course there's more to come. We'll talk about some of that action on this edition of Baseball HQ Radio with four guests from BaseballHQ.com, which is, in our humble opinion, the best fantasy baseball website in the business. First, we say hello to co-general manager and speculator columnist Ray Murphy. Ray, welcome to the show.
Glad to be back for a new stretch of podcast here, Patrick.
Yeah, we're calling this one show number one of 2014. It's going to be a lot of fun. Next, research and analysis contributor and a longtime fantasy expert at mastersball.com and other sites, Todd Zola. Todd, welcome back.
Great to be back, guys.
And our next two guests, familiar names and voices to regular listeners, as Todd is covering the National League beat, it's Harold Nichols. Nick, good to hear you again.
Good to be here. Thanks a lot, Patrick.
And our American League beat reporter is Jock Thompson. Jock, thanks for getting up early out there in California.
Sure thing, PD. Happy holiday.
And happy holidays to everybody on the call and, of course, everybody listening to the podcast, whether you're commuting or shoveling snow, whatever you're doing, glad to have you. So let's get started. We've seen about 50 batters sign as free agents, you guys, since the end of the season, and I'm wondering which signing do you think has been the most significant so far for fantasy purposes? Ray, let's start with you.
You know, for me, looking through the impact signings, the one I really like from the perspective of what the player's going to do with the new team is Brian McCann. You have him, you know, moving into Yankee Stadium, which is a nice hitter's park, and moving him to the American League and particularly into the Yankee lineup is going to give him some opportunities to rack up some extra at-bats at DH and maybe even first base in addition to his catching work. So kind of similar to the bounce we saw Mike Napoli get in Boston last year when he moved out from behind the plate, I think McCann might get a lot of those same benefits. He's not necessarily moving out from behind the plate full-time, but, you know, his at-bat total, I think, is going to end up being pretty big for a catcher in a pretty nice ballpark for a left-handed hitter. So as far as free agent signings who have improved their value, I'm going to put McCann at the top of my list.
Nick, what do you think?
Absolutely, Brian McCann. I agree with Ray. You know, the other thing to look at with Brian McCann is you got a guy who's 29 years old, has already proved he's a significant offensive contributor, and we know that catchers frequently don't hit their peak until they're in their early 30s. So Brian McCann, we may not have seen the best he can do yet. All of those things that Ray talked about, moving to the American League, the possibility of extra at-bats, I think that's a big, big signing and could have a real fantasy impact for Brian McCann owners.
Jock?
I like Ray and Nick's call on Brian McCann, particularly with the short porch in Yankee Stadium, but I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm going to go with Jose Abreu in the cell. Obviously, he's not your typical free agent, and he doesn't have any major league experience having played in Cuba, but here's a guy who's 27 years old. He has immense power. The cell is one of the premier launching pads. It's a guy, essentially, whose value goes from effectively zero to, at least according to our early projections, somewhere in the high teens. I think he's going to do pretty well, so it's going to be interesting.
It is going to be interesting, and of course a lot of us are going to be very interested to see where Jose Abreu goes in the mock drafts that are going to start up probably in earnest sometime around spring training, or how much he goes for in various drafts in dollar terms. I'm going to stick with the other guys, however. I'm going with Brian McCann as well. I thought this was a great move by the Yankees for their team and for fantasy players. We all know that Yankee Stadium, according to the BaseballHQ.com stadium effects grid, is the best stadium in baseball for left-handed home run hitters, and that's got to be a good sign for Brian McCann. Also, you have to like that they're sitting there right now, at least, with Ellsbury and Gardner at the top of their order, and McCann looks like he's going to slot into one of the run-producing positions. This could mean a lot of RBIs, especially when you take into account all the extra at-bats that Ray rightly points out that are going to be available to DH. I think he was already a premium catcher option. I think his value, or at least his valuation, is going to get a pretty big boost. Todd Zola, what do you think?
I think that most of you guys are in the right area code, but the wrong extension. I kind of like Jacoby Ellsbury. I know it's cliche. I mean, you know, we're supposed to be smart and pick a player that no one else thinks of. But I think the benefits that Ellsbury can get in Yankee Stadium are, I mean, he could be, you know, if something weird were to happen to Mr. Trout, Ellsbury could be the number one player in fantasy baseball. And I think that's pretty significant. I think that he's got this injury-prone reputation, but I think it's more accident-prone. And I think if, you know, he can just have teammates not fall on top of him and base runners not fall on his shoulder, I know he can play a full season. And I think the 20 home runs, you know, 40 or 50 steals is well within reach. And, you know, you can't win a draft in the first round, you know, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I think Ellsbury can win you a league. And I don't know. I just think the whole injury prone thing is overblown. Whereas McCann, I'm concerned. I mean, all this sounds great and on paper sounds great, but he's an old 29. He's been beat up. He's had, you know, eye problems. He's had all sorts of problems. He's had some injuries that are not just normal. I think there's some injury risk involved, and I know we can play first, NDH, but I think there's some injury risk with McCann that I think it's going to be the price to get him. You're going to lose that kind of, you're going to overpay. You're going to lose the buffer for the injury risk for what's going to cost to get McCann.
All right, so we got mostly votes for Brian McCann, but a couple of others. Let's move on to the pitchers. We've seen 40 pitchers or so signed as free agents, most of them pretty small fry. But which of the signed free agent pitchers do you think is the most important for fantasy owners? Let's start with Nick.
I think it's Scott Kazmira. Scott Kazmira is moving into a good situation in Oakland. He had a terrific second half last year. I mean, really flashed skills that we'd seen earlier in his career before injury. So as we look at the forecaster on our forecast on Scott Kazmira, here's a guy with up of 200 strikeouts, 200 innings pitched, should get some wins in Oakland. I like Scott Kazmira a lot.
Jock, what do you think?
Well, I think Nick's call on Kazmira is really good, but I may be speculating here a little bit. Chad Quall's value just took a real jump heading over to Houston. They haven't named a closer yet, but I took a look at his 2013, and I was stunned at how good he was. There were no blemishes on this performance. He had had three previous very forgettable years, all apparently stemming from some injuries that he had where he changed his mechanics. He went back. He re-implemented his old pitching style. He had a 63% ground ball rate. His strikeouts per nine went up almost 2.5 per game. I think he has a real inside track at being the closer for Houston.
Todd Zola, what say you?
I kind of like what the Padres did with Josh Johnson, taking a chance there. I think he was the old, you know, in quote, dead to me kind of guy for a lot of people last year. But as soon as you hear Petco Park in the same breath as the pitcher, suddenly you start to perk up a little bit. And his peripherals were a lot better than his outcomes may have shown. And if he is at all recovering, you know, if he's at all healthy, I kind of like what the Padres have done with Josh Johnson.
I agree with Todd. I'm going with Josh Johnson as well. He stank out the joint badly in Toronto this year. ERA over 6. His whip, I think, was around 1.7. But his skills were good, as Todd mentions. And he had 70 starts between 2009 and 11, guys. And during that time, he went 29-12 and had a 2.64 ERA, 1.11 whip, and struck out around 8.5 guys per 9 innings. Now, I'm not saying that Josh Johnson is going to be a top pick by any means, and obviously there's injury risk here, but I think he makes a decent sleeper because he's had some great results with these kind of skills. Ray, what do you say?
I'm going to go in another direction. I kind of like what the Twins did, picking up Ricky Nolasco and Phil Hughes, and I'm fairly bullish about the outlook for both of those guys in Minnesota in that bigger ballpark, particularly Hughes, who was, you know, pretty good and seemed to be rounding into his own with the Yankees over the past couple of years until he just completely imploded last year. But a lot of that seemed to be, you know, home ballpark Yankee Stadium issues, getting beat up by lefties with that short porch. And he's not going to have that problem in Minnesota. And if he leaves behind the baggage of, you know, sort of an up and down Yankee career, you know, I think that's, you know, I was interested in Hughes when he was a free agent to see where he would land and see if he would find an environment that looked like a place where he could be successful. And I think Minnesota was pretty much the best case scenario for that. So I'm pretty darn interested in Hughes.
Okay, so we have Phil Hughes, a couple of votes for Josh Johnson, as well as Chad Qualls and Scott Kazmir. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the free agents have affected real baseball. You're listening to Baseball HQ Radio.
I'd like to do something called baseball and football, because these two things are such a part of our lives, these two activities, and yet they're so different. The object of the game is quite different. The object of the game in football is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home. I'm going home. I'm going home.
Baseball HQ Radio.
And welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio. I'm Patrick Davitt with our roundtable hot stove league discussion of the free agent moves and trades that have taken place since the end of the 2013 season, talking with four experts from BaseballHQ.com. And guys, I want to ask you, first of all, which big league team or organization do you think has fared best with its moves as far as real baseball and competitiveness are concerned? And let me start this time with Jock Thompson.
Okay, going into 2013, the Nationals were the favorite in the National League East, at least in my opinion, to win that championship. Obviously, they had some inconsistent play and some injuries, and Atlanta shut them down fairly early. But I love what they did this year in acquiring Doug Fister for nothing. I mean, Doug Fister pitched 208 innings this year. He had an ERA of 367. His command was 3-1, his strikeouts to walks. I don't know what Detroit was thinking. I think Washington is once again the favorite in the NL East, and I think the Fister deal puts them over the top, so I'm going with Washington.
Todd Zola, which major league team has improved its competitiveness the most?
I'm going to sort of piggyback on Jock's free agent signing with Jose Daryl Abreu. I like what the White Sox have done, kind of quietly assembled a pretty competitive team. You know, even their recent deal getting Davidson, I think, gets them a little bit of a piece. Their pitching needs some work, but they do have Alejandro Diaza out there to deal if they want, because they did acquire Adam Eaton. People, you know, why would they possibly get Adam Eaton? Well, when you have a chance to get Adam Eaton for next to nothing, you do it, and then you try to figure out later what to do. So they still have they're not done yet. They still have a piece. If they can get any kind of pitching at all with Sale, they've got the number one, and they quietly signed Felipe Molina. The park might not be the best for him, but he does keep the ball on the ground, so there's a chance if he's healthy that's a nice quiet signing as well. So White Sox, kind of a wild card sort of team.
Yeah, I like the White Sox too. I like Arizona. I thought they did well getting Trumbo, even though it cost them Eaton. I think the Cardinals did really well. They filled in a lot of holes where they needed to fill in a lot of holes. But I think the big winners is the White Sox as well. Eaton gives them a really terrific on-base guy at the top of the order with Alexei Ramirez in the two-hole. That's going to look pretty good. They filled in the middle with Abreu, Avisail Garcia last year. And this Davidson guy, if he sticks, you know, he can hit. The question is he going to strike out too much? But I think they're going to score runs. And like Todd says, maybe the issue here is going to be their rotation. The locks look like it's a case of Danks and Sale and pray for hail kind of thing, but they've got some options and they still have time to acquire somebody else. I like the Chicago White Sox so far a lot. Ray Murphy, what do you think?
You skimmed on them really quick there, Patrick, but let's talk a little bit about the Cardinals. To be fair, you know, we're grading on a curve here. The Cardinals had a lot more resources and a lot fewer holes than some other teams, so they entered the offseason in a favorable position to begin with. But I really like the way they retooled things, signing Johnny Peralta to play shortstop and moving Matt Carpenter III to clear a spot for Colton Wong, and all of that was precipitated by the David Freese trade, getting Peter Burgess for the outfield and getting Freese off the roster, which all of which sums up to I really like what the Cardinals have in their lineup. They lost Beltran, and you know they've fixed that black hole they had at shortstop with Pete Cosma, but they have solutions in place for all of those problems with Matt Adams in first and Craig going to the outfield now and Oscar Tavares waiting in the wings. But the way they brought in Peralta and went out and got Borges, I really thought was a nice surgical strike by them. So I'll cast my vote for them.
And don't forget Mark Ellis, right?
Oh, right, and Ellis to match up with Wong, absolutely.
Yeah, perfect.
Nick, what do you think?
All of those are good choices, I think. I'm going to throw out one more name just to part of the discussion, and that's Oakland. They've done a really good job. They jumped on Jim Johnson. When there was a salary dump going on in Baltimore, they brought in Luke Gregerson. They've got Kazmir to the rotation. They've got some extra depth with Craig Gentry and Punto and Pomeranz. So I think Oakland did a good job as well. So I think there are a number of teams that have done very well in improving themselves over the winter.
Yeah, I'm not that crazy about any team signing Nick Punto for much, but I guess they say he's a good clubhouse guy, but they had trouble at second base. I hope that's not all they did to fill it. What do you think was the best or smartest or wisest free agent signing so far, Todd?
Here I'm going to piggyback with Ray. Sorry, Ray. I know I'm actually not going to jump on your back. That would be bad. But Phil Hughes, I like him better as a real, air quotes, real baseball signing than fantasy just now. I'm not quite sure that I'm ready to jump on him in fantasy. I think he's a great, great pick in as far as, dart throw for a real pitcher. I've always thought he could be, Homer Bailey-like in a better park. Now, the analogy is not very good because Bailey pitches in a hitter's park. But that those sort of numbers I think you can get out of Phil Hughes if he was in a better park, and he is. I think, fantasy-wise, sure, why not take a chance? But I think, as far as the dart throw, the speculative guy, for the real rotation, I really like him, Phil Hughes.
I'll say I mentioned, along with others, Brian McCann signing with the Yankees, but I think their most important signing might be Jacoby Ellsbury. Obviously, his performance is going to help. He's a good leadoff man, despite a lowish on-base percentage compared to some others. But he has that good speed out in the field to go along with Brent Gardner, assuming they don't deal Gardner. But I think the most important thing about signing Ellsbury was that it told everyone in baseball that all the talk about the Yankees' newfound fiscal discipline or restraint isn't going to keep them from maintaining their competitive edge and using their financial muscle. I thought the message was loud and clear, especially for the Red Sox, their biggest rivals, because that's where he came from, obviously, and it's kind of a shot across the bow. Don't count the Yankees out just yet. Ray Murphy, what do you think in Boston country?
I'm going to talk about a guy who left Boston. I think there's only one time this whole offseason when a contract has been announced that I have said to myself, wow, I thought he'd get more money than that. And that was Jared Saltalamacchia going to Miami. He got 3 years and $21 million, I think. And if you go compare that to what AJ Pierzynski got for 1 year in Boston and what Carlos Ruiz got in Philadelphia, or certainly McCann, that's a relative bargain. And it's not great news for Saltalamacchia's fantasy value, because that's still a park that doesn't do any favors to left-handed power. But and Todd said, if you start talking about quote-unquote real baseball, I think Saltalamacchia going down there makes a lot of sense for the Marlins, and he's the kind of guy who can sort of nurture that young pitching staff, and I think that makes a lot of sense, and is one of the only fiscally I don't want to say fiscally responsible, because obviously everyone has the money, but one of the only bargain signings I've seen so far this winter.
Yeah, the money side of it is pretty interesting. I just read something today on the web someplace that said that Major League Baseball's salaries are now down to 42% of revenues, which is by far the lowest among the big sports, even hockey. So there's money to throw around, and it's amazing that sometimes guys will sign for what seems to be a lot less than their share of it. Nick, who do you think did well signing a particular free agent?
I think I'm going to have to piggyback on you, Patrick, and I like Jacoby Ellsbury as a signing a lot. He could be the best player in baseball this year, and at the top of that Yankee lineup, he looks very, very dangerous. So I think that was a good signing. It was an expensive signing for the Yankees, but I think a very good signing.
Jock Thompson.
I'm going to go back to Jose Abreu in Chicago. The White Sox signed him for 6 years at age 27. They're going to get his peak years. They got him for about $11 million a year. I think with his kind of power, he's going to be good for 25 homers a year in the cell. I think he was the best signing, particularly since we're talking reality and money right now.
Okay, guys, and now we'll turn it around. Who do you think so far has been the worst free agent signing? And to take the pressure off, I'll go first. I think 2 years and $20 million for Bartolo Colon seems like a very risky move for the Mets. He's got PED risk, cheeseburger risk, for want of a better term, injury risk. It seems like it's a lot of risk. And the Rockies signing Boone Logan for $5.5 million a year, even though there's money to burn, that's really burning it as far as I'm concerned. Ray Murphy, who do you think's the worst free agent signing?
I'm torn between two signings that were done by the same team, so I'll just kind of throw the Phillies under the bus here. The renewal of Carlos Reeves for, you know, $3 and $26 million, I think it was, and the Marlon Byrd signing for 2 years and $16 million. Put those together, and you've got, you know, $40-something million of money committed to guys deep into their 30s who have erratic performance at best, and, you know, to your point, both have some, you know, Bird has the PED cloud around him, and Ruiz was suspended for amphetamines, I think, last year. So I don't understand what's going on in Philadelphia. I know a lot of people don't understand that either, but, you know, this might be the year that the wheels really come crashing off that bus and things get ugly. And if that happens, they're going to be sitting around wondering why they're paying $40-something million to Carlos Ruiz and Marlon Byrd.
Harold Nichols, what do you think?
You know, I think Ray's got a real point. I mean, what the heck is Philly thinking? You've got two guys that are in their mid-30s tied up for three years, one, 2 years the other. Goodness me. This is a team that needs to get younger, and they're just getting older. So I think that's those are some of the worst moves that have been made this winter.
Jock Thompson.
Now, I realize that salaries have escalated and they've increased, and I also realize that Houston needs something at the top of that rotation to buy time for the rookies. But I still have a problem with the Feldman signing, Scott Feldman. $30 million for 3 years. You know, this is a guy who has struggled most of his career. He had a 180 innings last year, and before that he'd never pitched over 140 in three different years. I just don't see how Houston's not going to look at this deal in another year or two and look at it as wasted money. I mean, Feldman had had a lot of luck in Chicago, both hit rate and strand rate wise. He's going to need more luck to survive in Houston. I don't like giving him $30 million.
And finally, Todd Zola, what's the worst free agent signing you've seen so far?
I was just sniped on a round table. I can't believe it. Drafting is one thing, Jock, but to take my guy in a round table, I was going to use Feldman. So just to throw another name out there, I don't know, maybe this one's a little too obvious. Timmy Lincecum, I know they're paying him for previous work. I just think that, I don't know, that they're being awful kind to give him. It was only 2 years, but, you know, 2 years, 17 and a half. I think on a team that still can compete with the right moves, I think they put a little bit too many resources into saying thank you to Mr. Lincecum.
All good choices. I'll throw in, just as we depart this topic, the Mariners signing Corey Hart and Logan Morrison just baffles me also. They sign Cano and then they go out and do something like this. I don't get it, but then again, I don't get a lot of things. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the trade market. You're listening to Baseball HQ Radio.
Take me out to the ballgame.
Baseball HQ Radio.
Welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio. Patrick Davitt with Ray Murphy, Harold Nichols, Jock Thompson, and Todd Zola. Guys, we've talked about the free agents. Now let's talk about the trades. Was anyone else as surprised as I was that the White Sox traded their closer and just got back a third base prospect? Let's start with Ray.
Not really. We were talking about the White Sox in the last segment. I'm a little less optimistic about their chances. I think that's a team that by picking up Eaton and picking up Davidson is sort of, even though they added Abreu who might hit right away, I think that's a team that's, you know, looking to turn things over and, you know, is looking a couple years down the road. And if you're looking a couple years down the road, you don't need a closer right now. So, I mean, was the return a little light? I guess that kind of depends on what you think of Davidson. You know, that's a pretty good park to bring him into, I think. So maybe they think they can, plug him in at third base for cheap for the next three, four, 5 years. But I can sort of see what they're doing, just in the sense that Reed was going to get expensive and they don't need an expensive closer, and Davidson's cheap, and if they like him, he might turn into something that can help them.
Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think Ray's analysis is a good one, but I was shocked at the time that the trade happened very, very surely. I mean, Reed had a good year. Reed is young. It may be that the thinking was exactly what Ray described. By the time they're ready to contend, Reed may be too expensive to be their closer, and so they got a good young guy back that they can use in their lineup. So if that was the thinking, that makes sense, but I certainly was surprised at the time it happened.
Jock Thompson.
Yeah, I was surprised just from the standpoint that that the return was late, like Ray said. Reed really wasn't meant for the sell. He's a huge fly ball pitcher. And not that Chase Field is any great shakes for home runs, but it plays a little better than the cell. I think he's going to do fairly good over there. I don't know about Davidson. I mean, he's only 22 years old. When I looked at his numbers and his age, I thought maybe I'd been a little too hard on him and maybe dismissed him before his future really plays out. So we'll have to see how this works. But, yeah, I was a little bit surprised.
Moving along, Todd Zola, what did you think of the Addison Reed deal?
I think they like Matt David. I think they like Davidson. And I think they just wanted Davidson and they went out and got him. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think we talked about Pfister before. You know, the trade was good for Detroit. It made them better. Could they have gotten more? Well, I don't know. I mean, this trade is good for Chicago. It makes them better or puts them on a track like Ray saying. Could they have gotten more? I don't know. But I think, you know, sometimes you just want to get it over with so you can move on to the next move. And I kind of like Davidson as a dart throw for Chicago in that park. And I'm not at all surprised that they made the move.
Yeah, the whole deal put me in mind of what the A's have been doing for a while, which is to groom these closers, get them established, and then trade them, because one of the market inefficiencies that they've identified might well be that closers are usually overvalued, that any guy who can throw strikes and get the job done can close if you just put him in that role. It's not as sanctified as a lot of organizations seem to believe, and certainly not as much as a lot of media people seem to believe. I'm somewhat dubious about Matt Davidson. He's a converted pitcher, and he strikes out a lot, so I guess the proof of the pudding will be in the eating as far as that goes. If he hits, he's certainly in a place to do that, and if he hits, that means he can probably be a real bargain guy for the team for 5 or 6 years, as Ray says. Talking about closers, the A's were very busy in December with a flurry of deals. They got Jim Johnson, Luke Gregerson for their bullpen. They picked up Craig Gentry, a reserve outfielder, starting pitcher Josh Lindblom. They got Pomeranz and Chris Jensen from Colorado for Brett Anderson. These guys have been very busy, and I'm wondering, we always suspect the A's are doing something smart and exploiting a market inefficiency. If so, what is the market inefficiency? And if not, what the heck are they doing, Nick?
They made their list, they knew what they wanted, and they've gone out and gotten it. And I think that's, if more teams really did that, instead of chasing the high big-name, expensive free agents, they may be far better off. So I like what the A's have done. I don't know that it's always market inefficiencies. I mean, they've got Jim Johnson. That's not a cheap guy, but at the same time, looks like he could do very well in Oakland. They got Luke Gregerson, and Gregerson certainly is going to add a lot to that bullpen. So I think the A's did quite well in what they did. I'm not sure what market inefficiency was they identified, but I do think they knew what they were doing and went after it.
And again, perhaps it's nothing more than they realized that a closer is something you can always trade if things aren't working out for you. Johnson might fetch them a nice little prospect at the halfway point of the year if Oakland doesn't find itself succeeding as well. And then Gregerson could conceivably step right in. Todd Zola, what'd you think of this deal?
Actually, I think a lot of similar to what Nick said, but I think the way to put it is, they look at it like we would look at if we played it in a simulation league, like a score sheet or a strat. What they would do, they were looking for the right pieces for their team. They weren't looking for names. They weren't looking for, you know, stats. They were looking for pieces for a baseball team. And, you know, we don't need to do that in rotisserie. I think so. Not even market inefficiencies. I think they were just that they need a reliever. They need a utility guy. They need an outfielder that can chase fly balls down. So to me, that's more what they did. And the little dirty secret about Jimmy Johnson is, I'm not going to say he's dominant now, but his K rate did spike over 7 this past year. And if he can keep any of that with the ground ball rate, I mean, he's no longer, I'll take Johnson. No way you're going to get 50 saves. The skills aren't as bad as we may perceive.
And also, even if he doesn't have the huge strikeout rate, it's a good park for guys who put the ball in play, especially if the defense is sound, and they seem to have covered that a little bit, as you mentioned as well. Ray, what did you think of this?
Jock and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, and I think there might be an inefficiency of sorts here. And my theory is that they're building this really deep bullpen because you rattled off of the guys that they went out and got, and they already had a couple of good guys in that bullpen, and you know, guys like Cook and Doolittle. I think they're actually looking to take some workload away from their starting pitchers, and now that they're going to go as far as the Rockies did a couple years ago in trying to shorten up their starting pitching workload, but I think they're really going to look to get their starters out of the game, you know, after 5 1/3 or 6 innings at the latest, and turn it over to this deep bullpen that has a lot of different styles and matchup options. And if you look at the young starters they have, there's a lot of guys they probably still want to manage the workload on. And if you look at Kazmir, who's the one starting pitcher that went out and signed, he's not the most durable guy and has never been a, you know, throw 7 1/3, 8 innings kind of guy. You know, he's more of a 100 pitches into the 6th inning kind of guy. So my take is that they're building a deep bullpen that can allow their starting pitchers to go out and just air it out. And when the starting pitchers run out of gas, they'll just get them out of there early. And if it means 3 1/3 or 4 innings from their bullpen a night, I think they're okay with that. If you look at guys like Johnson and Gregerson, not only are they very talented, but if you look at them, they're also very durable. And they go and take the ball for their 70 innings a year. And, you know, Johnson gets the ground balls and keeps his pitch counts down. I think they can, you know, I think they're building, you know, what is, I think, the deepest bullpen in the game for a reason. They're going to use it heavily.
So they're doing the Colorado Rockies thing, kind of throwing the game into the bullpen much earlier than is normally thought of as ideal, and letting their bullpen take care of a lot of outs. Could be a matter of executing it better than Colorado did, certainly, and they're on the right track. The Angels traded Mark Trumbo to Arizona. We talked about that a little bit. Tyler Skaggs, Hector Santiago come back. Adam Eaton goes to the White Sox. In this three-way deal, who got the best of it? And let's start with Jock, because he's saying goodbye to Mark Trumbo, a favorite player.
Well, this was a real baseball trade, and yeah, I really like Mark Trumbo. I know some members of his family, and Mark has always been a pretty good clubhouse guy, stand-up guy. But we're not going to know who won this trade, I think, for a couple of years. At least I don't think we will, unless Trumbo flames out in Arizona. I think his predictability is probably better than the other guys. Tyler Skaggs may not start the year with the Angels. Santiago is an interesting guy, particularly his numbers coming out of Coors Field. I mean, he's got real base on ball issues that need to be corrected, and I know Butcher hasn't had too many wins in that area yet. But the Angels needed arms, and I was kind of pessimistic about the Angels until this trade, and this is the kind of trade that I think is going to get at least some of their season ticket holders a little more excited than they were, because it gives them a chance, at least an outside chance, to be competitive if one or both of these arms come through. And when you look at the fact that they can pick up a guy like Raul Ibanez, who, whether you like him or not, at age 42, can maybe hit 15 home runs for $2 million plus, and they've got a guy like C.J. Cron coming up in the minors who profiles almost identically to Trumbo, this was an easy trade for the Angels to make, in my opinion. But who won this deal? It's going to be interesting to find out over the next few years.
Todd Zola, what do you think?
I may have been a little harbinger to my answer before with talking about the White Sox, but I mean, I agree that Santiago is an interesting pitcher, Jock, if he can, you know, get the walks down and stay healthy, which I think is the real key. But be able to add Adam Eaton, and I don't want to make it sound like, I mean, that Adam Eaton's all that. He was a potential Rookie of the Year candidate last year. He's still got a lot to prove. But I think when you can get Adam Eaton for basically Santiago and then still have a Chip and Diaz to get somebody else, I think the White Sox have done themselves pretty good with this deal.
I like the White Sox end of it as well, for the same reasons that Todd says, especially the Diaz chip. It moves him out of center field, where he wasn't particularly useful. Eaton's a plus defender. Diaz moves either to left field or out of town for something else that they can use. In the meantime, it gives them some platoon flexibilities with Diaz and Vicedo and other guys who are competing for that left field spot or some at-bats out there. I think I like what the White Sox did here. Ray, what do you think?
Well, let's talk about the side that we haven't really touched on here. I largely agree with what's been said about the Angels and the White Sox, but taking this from the Diamondbacks' perspective, to me, they're the one team that did not win this deal. I just don't understand the fascination with Trumbo, especially given the presence of Goldschmidt and the need to move Trumbo to the outfield. I think now you've got a guy who's got, to be fair, the best established plus skill of anybody in this trade, which is his power. But there are so many warts with that come along with that power that I think are going to be exposed in Arizona. You put him in the outfield, he's a poor defender, he's a poor on-base guy. You don't have the option to DH him, you don't have the option to play him at first base. I really think that the Diamondbacks got fixated on getting another power bat for their middle of the lineup, and while they got that, I'm not sure they fully calculated the price they're paying in other areas of the game. I really don't like it from their perspective.
Nick, how about you?
You know, I think, yeah, I agree with what Ray just said about the Diamondbacks being the big losers in the trade. And I agree it's going to be a while before we know about the winner. Certainly the potential real premium player in this trade, I think, was Adam Eaton. But we don't know what he's going to develop into. We've seen a lot of guys that we thought were premium players coming out of the minor leagues and had them not do so well and struggle a lot when they get to the majors. And then 3 years down the road, we say, what do we see in this guy anyway? So, you know, until we know how Adam Eaton performs in Chicago, we really won't know who won the trade. But I think there's certainly potential there that Chicago will be the ultimate winner in this deal.
And before we go, it happened what seems like half a lifetime ago, but the first big deal of the offseason, obviously Prince Fielder goes to Texas, Ian Kinsler back the other way. Let's talk about that or any other trade you think is important to consider. Todd Zola, what do you think of either that deal or something else we didn't talk about?
Since I have a feeling that deal will come up, I'm going to talk real quick. We mentioned it briefly, the Doug Fister deal. I don't care about the Doug Fister side of things. Any move at all that gets Drew Smyly into the rotation is a good move for me. I think Smyly can replace Fister's numbers. I don't know about the whole postseason sort of thing. I think, you know, remains to be seen. But just because Drew Smyly is now a starter, and I now have a starting pitcher on about 15 different teams. Well, okay, three different fantasy teams as opposed to a middle reliever. I'm pretty happy.
I agree with that, Todd. I want to talk about the Prince Fielder, Ian Kinsler deal, and I would caution that anybody who thinks Ian Kinsler is going to be a really good fantasy get this year, I think is going to be mistaken. He's on the wrong side of a bunch of trends in his skills and in his performance. I'm really leery about Ian Kinsler this year. I think Fielder's going to do fairly well in Texas. It's certainly a more amenable park for hitters than Detroit was. And I wonder what you guys think about the effect it's going to have on Miguel Cabrera in the Detroit lineup, whether there's such a thing as lineup protection. If there is, it certainly seems like Cabrera's lost quite a bit of it. Ray, what do you think of all of this?
Yeah, I agree. I very much agree with you about Kinsler. I largely agree with you about Fielder in Texas. I think I lean toward the camp that his, you know, off peak year last year was more of an anomaly than than the beginning of a fade. So I think he's got some bounce back in him, and certainly that park is going to help. On the other side of it, excuse me, with the lineup protection issue, you know, the Tigers, you know, Cabrera was a good hitter before they got Fielder, and you know he went to another level in the last couple of years. But, you know, he's going to be fine. I'm not convinced that it's a big worry there. The Tigers have, you know, sort of retooled the guys who are going to be in front of him. And to me, the concern with Cabrera is less who's hitting behind him and who's protecting him, and are the guys on base, are the guys batting in front of him getting on base? If they got on base, it generates RBI opportunities and makes it harder to walk them. So I'm more concerned about Austin Jackson and Kinsler and whoever else ends up hitting in front of him. Torrey Hunter will still be up there a little bit. So that's, you know, if you're worried about Cabrera, and I'm not totally worried about Cabrera if he's healthy, I'd be looking more up ahead of the lineup than behind him if I'm trying to figure out how his value changes in this calculation.
Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the Fielder trade for me is a real issue for Detroit because of the lack of protection for Cabrera. And I agree with Ray. It's going to depend on who's in front of him in terms of RBI opportunities and that sort of thing. But he's going to see fewer fastballs, fewer good pitches to hit, more intentional walks. You know, and it's not going to ruin him as a hitter. I mean, the guy is at on level all by himself. But we may see a step down from what he's done the last couple of years without that kind of line of protection unless somebody steps in to work behind him. So in that regard, I don't really like the trade from Detroit's point of view. I love Prince Fielder in Texas. I think he could have a huge year.
And Jock?
I want to talk about another trade that was made, and that's the trade that sent Dexter Fowler from Colorado to Houston. Now, just on the surface, that's a That's just a terrible trade for Dexter Fowler owners. If you look at what Fowler did at outside of Coors Field, it was a typical Coors Field performance. He hit .214. I realize Houston thinks it improved their outfield, and maybe they did because their outfield's pretty bad to begin with as they wait for George Springer, but I don't see Fowler being a fantasy asset at all this coming year in Houston. He'll get his double-digit home runs and stolen bases, but I think it's really going to be neutralized by that batting average.
All right, Todd, did you want to say something?
I was going to say, on the flip side, don't sleep on Brandon Barnes going to Colorado either. Their left field could be up for grabs a bit, depending upon if they really do put Rosario at first, platooning or whatnot. Barnes is a good player. He's great defensively. I wouldn't sleep on, especially NL only, as sort of a fourth or fifth, end game outfielder that could get a lot more playing time than the initial projections might say. Brandon Barnes is definitely on my get list in that sort of a situation.
All right, guys, good segment. When we come back, we'll talk about the moves that are yet to come. You're listening to Baseball HQ Radio.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Yes, it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Baseball HQ Radio.
And just before we get back to our roundtable discussion, I wanted to remind you that the 2014 Baseball Forecaster is now available, the indispensable tool to get ready for the 2014 fantasy baseball season with player boxes, charts, essays, and everything you need to dominate your league. You can order now at baseballhq.com. You'll get the electronic files, both PDF and Excel versions, as well as your hard copy of the book. And don't forget to pre-order your 2014 Minor League Baseball Analyst, should come your way in January. And welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio. I'm Patrick Davitt with Ray Murphy, Harold Nichols, Jock Thompson, and Todd Zola from BaseballHQ.com. We're talking about the trades and the free agent moves. And before we let you go, fellas, I want to know, what free agent batter signings are you still looking to see? And what do you expect is going to happen in regard to that particular thing? Ray, what batter chips are you looking for?
On the batter side, the big names that are still out there are Chu and Cruz. And, locally there's still some speculation about Stephen Drew. His case is interesting in that he, turned down the qualifying offer from the Sox and is looking for a multi-year deal now that I don't know whether it's going to materialize, since the team that signs him has to lose a compensatory draft pick. So, the Red Sox went and traded Franklin Morales for Jonathan Herrera this week, which sort of seemed to be a statement that they have positioned themselves where they don't need to wait on Drew anymore. But I wouldn't be surprised if, if this takes a little while longer and three weeks or a month from now, Drew kind of comes crawling back and can't find the multi-year deal he was looking for and ends up re-signing with Boston yet. And that, of course, has cascading effects on Xander Bogaerts and Will Middlebrooks and that sort of thing. So that's one situation that's, a little bit local to me, but I'm watching very closely.
Nick, what batter are you looking for as the next chip to fall?
Well, the big one out there, of course, is Chu, and who knows what's going to happen. You've got he's asking for a huge contract. We're out now at the point in the signing period when I think teams are going to wait it out. He didn't go right away, so I think teams are going to wait a while and see if the price comes down. And I have no idea where he'll land at this point. I think somebody who's not been a bidder at all could step in and try to grab him. I like Shinsu Chu as a player. I don't think he's nearly as good as they're trying to sell him as being, and so it'll be interesting to see where he lands and who finally bites on the kind of offer they're trying to get for him.
Jock, what do you think? Who are you looking for?
I'm real interested in what happens to Kendrys Morales. I've always liked Kendrys when, of course, he's been healthy. He's been a pretty consistent hitter, and I think he still has some upside at his age if he can get the ball on off the ground. He has good power, but he has that draft pick attached to him, and it's supposed to be a pretty good draft coming up this June. I don't know where he lands. The rumor is Baltimore. Baltimore has pick number 17. It's not protected. But there's a few clubs that need first baseman DHs, and Morales is a pretty good bet. So that's going to be an interesting situation to watch.
Todd Zola.
Chinchuchu is the guy I'm watching. And it's not just because of himself, but he could hit leadoff, he could hit third, whatever. You know, this is a guy that, you know, does projections and does playing time and such like that. There's an entire team's worth of projections that are going to change when he signs. Where is he going to go in the batting order? Who do we have to move around? So that's kind of what I'm looking for Chu.
Yeah, I like. I think Chu's the key guy here now because it's going to set some price expectations for Cruz and some of the others, and kind of a bit of a waiting game between Cruz and Chu. I think maybe each guy looking at the other to set some kind of market level for the other guy. Neither of them wants to go first for fear of leaving money on the table. Now let's turn to the same question for pitchers: who are you watching, and what do you think might happen? And I'm going to start. I'll start off by talking about the White Sox. I'm going to be watching to see if they try to get another starter. Irvin Santana and Matt Garza are out there. They must be getting a little nervous. You also have kind of second-tier guys: Burnett, Ubaldo Jimenez, Bronson Arroyo. I'm curious to see if the White Sox are going to surprise us by signing a starter, or if they're going to push their chips in on Quintana and Johnson. Ray?
Yeah, so we mentioned some of the guys who are still out there. I think most of the names have come up already. You've got Garza, you've got Irvin Santana, you've got Ubaldo Jimenez. And to me, the biggest thing with these guys is kind of the same principle I was talking about with Phil Hughes earlier. The value on these guys is going to be heavily park dependent. So, you know, I sort of can't pass judgment on whether I like any of these guys for 2014 until I know where they're pitching. So, you know, for all three of them, there's the possibility that they could land somewhere favorable the way Nolasco and Hughes did, and suddenly I'm very interested, or they could end up in any number of hitters' parks, and, you know, they all have enough warts on their track records, you know, with recent inconsistent performance, and, you know, sort of all three of them are kind of erratic over the last couple of years, that, you know, my opinion could go from buy to stay away pretty quickly, just depending on where they land.
All right, Ray, Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Ray. I mean, absolutely. Those are the guys to watch. Jimenez, Garza, certainly, depending on where they land, Santana, it's going to make a difference in whether you have any interest in them fantasy-wise at all. So those are the ones to keep your eye on, I think.
Jock.
Obviously, the big name that has to go, or they have to decide something on before those names go, it seems, would be Tanaka. Is he coming or going? Because a lot of the competitive teams that still have the ability to sign pitching, the Yankees, Texas, et cetera, who are rumored to be interested in Tanaka, that's going to determine whether they are willing to eat that pick and go down to that next level. So Tanaka is going to be an interesting watch just to see if he's posted.
I saw something this morning, by the way, the guys that said he was not going to be posted. I don't know how authoritative that was.
I saw a story that said something to the effect that the Japanese team is watching and seeing, and they're waiting for perhaps a major league team to suggest that they post two guys so that the major league team can post $40 million instead of the maximum $20 million and get some more money into their coffers, and then take some scrub that they're not interested in anyway as a two-for-one type of deal. So Tanaka definitely is an interesting thing just because of what it says about the posting process. Todd, what do you think?
It's fantasy, so all we care about is closers. Where's Fernando Rodney going to go? Where's Chris Perez going to go?
And, of course, a lot of that might depend on what goes on with Grant Balfour, who's now on hold with Baltimore because of some issues with his shoulder, and they're going to get some exams and so forth. So all of a sudden, Rodney and Perez might be more interesting than we thought they were a little while ago. Also, we haven't even mentioned David Price and the likelihood that he ends up wearing a new uniform this year at some point, which is also going to have some effects on what people think of starting pitching as far as its value goes. Last question, guys. I'll give you 30 seconds or so. Who's your 2014 sleeper, and who's your 2014 bust? We'll start with Baseball HQ Radio National League beat reporter Harold Nichols.
Sleeper, I'd go with Xander Bogaerts. I think in Boston, if he's got full time to play, he could be absolutely tremendous. Bust, I think Ricky Nolasco is going to bust it bad in Minnesota. Here's a guy with an ERA that's almost close to 4.4 career-wise. Had a good year last year, but I don't think he's going to carry it over.
Jock Thompson, American League beat reporter for HQ Radio.
I'm going to stay in Southern California with both picks. I'm going to take Cole Calhoun for the Angels. He does everything well, just a little bit. I think he's going to put up some good counting stats if he gets 500 at-bats, and from what I saw last year, he can do that. It's starting to look like Alex Guerrero is getting a little shaky with the Dodgers. He's had hamstring problems. They're not quite sure whether he's going to make that transfer real easy to second base. He may be a disappointment, and don't be surprised to see the Dodgers looking for a backup over the rest of the offseason.
My sleeper, you guys, is either going to be Josh Johnson or Scott Kazmir, both of whose names came up earlier when we were talking about free agent signings. And my bust for this year, Dominic Brown of the Phillies. I just didn't buy it when it was happening last year, and I think there's a guy who's absolutely primed for a big regression that's going to cost a lot of fantasy players a lot of money. We lost Todd Zola with some technical issues. I do know that he wanted to promote Leonis Martin of the Texas Rangers as his sleeper for 2014. Ray Murphy, bring us home.
I'll keep it to guys who changed teams and were in our discussion today. For guys I like, we mentioned Phil Hughes, and I'm also a big believer in Adam Eaton. Now that he's in Chicago and getting an opportunity. On the bust side, I'm going to go with Curtis Granderson.
All right, guys, thank you very much for doing this. Jock, thanks so much.
Okay, PD, talk to you later.
Ray Murphy, as always, thanks so much. We'll be looking for the speculator column at baseballhq.com.
Absolutely, and happy holidays to everyone.
And Harold Nichols, our old friend down there in the South, enjoying 70-degree weather while the rest of us are freezing. Have a great holiday, Nick, and everybody else. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks to everyone. Happy holidays.
And that's Baseball HQ Radio for December the 20th. Thanks very much for taking the time to download and listen to show number one of the 2014 fantasy baseball season. I also want to thank our guests today from BaseballHQ.com, the best fantasy baseball website in the business, co-general manager and speculator columnist Ray Murphy, research and analysis contributor Todd Zola, Baseball HQ Radio National League beat reporter Harold Nichols, and American League beat reporter Jock Thompson. I'm Patrick Davitt. I hope to see you on the BaseballHQ.com subscriber forums. Also, remember, you can check out BaseballHQ on Facebook and our Twitter feed at BaseballHQ, my own personal Twitter feed at Patrick Davitt. More importantly, please tell your friends about Baseball HQ Radio and take a second to go to iTunes and add to our 4.8-star rating. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back again in January with another edition of the podcast with Fantasy Baseball Intelligence for Winners. It is Baseball HQ Radio. Have a great holiday, and so long.
Baseball HQ Radio is a weekly free podcast available through iTunes and other podcast aggregators, or directly from baseballhq.com, where we have an archive of past shows as well. Just look for the HQ Radio microphone logo on the right side of the baseballhq.com homepage. Baseball HQ Radio is a production of the USA Today Sports Media Group. The opinions expressed on Baseball HQ Radio are those of the individual speaking and not necessarily those of the USA Today Sports Media Group. The program is produced and edited by Patrick Davitt.